Good evening and welcome to Outbeat Collage Out in the Arts. I'm Michaela Kennan, your host for tonight's show. Right off the bat, here is a special shout out to my co-host Gary Carnevelli, who literally is out and about this weekend having a big birthday celebration. Gary, hope you're having a great time and are being wildly and wonderfully celebrated. Mary Moore Campagna is on the engineering boards this evening. Greg Moralia is here with the latest LGBT news. A bit later on, we'll hear a couple of pre-recorded interviews from Gary featuring Buzz Bentz, director of Avow, which is now showing at the Pegasus Theater in Rio Nido. Also, Jason Perdue, who will tell us more about the Sebastopol Documentary Film Festival and the special screening of Out in Silence, happening next Friday evening, July 22nd. In between, we'll play a little music, bring it all to you live from here in the KRCB studios, under a full moon in beautiful Sonoma County, California. Let's go to Greg with the news.
Say it, say it, say it.
Good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for Sunday, July 17, 2011. The Department of Justice is urging the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to put its decision from last week on hold so as to keep Don't Ask, Don't Tell enforceable until the law is officially repealed by President Barack Obama and key military leaders. The court last week ordered the ban on openly gay service members to be lifted in all U.S. military operations around the world. Log Cabin Republicans Executive Director and Army Combat Veteran Clark Cooper called the government's move troubling. In a statement on Thursday, he said, "All this does is confuse the situation for our men and women in uniform. Let me be clear. The president is asking the court for the power to continue threatening service members with investigation and discharge, and the right to turn away qualified Americans from military service for no reason other than their sexual orientation." Dan Woods, the attorney representing the Log Cabin Republicans in the case, said, "The motion has no other purpose other than to request that the military be permitted to investigate and discharge service members and block new enlistments based solely on the individual's sexuality. Otherwise," he said, "the move is inexplicable." The governor of Tennessee said that stopping businesses from discriminating against gay people would be bad for the economy. Governor Bill Haslam signed the bill in May that voided anti-discrimination ordinances created by cities and counties, which had barred employers and others from discriminating against gay people. Haslam told the Nashville City paper that he is not only against local ordinances, but if someone proposed adding gay people to the state's anti-discrimination law, he'd oppose that too. But in a sharp contrast to the action of Tennessee's governor, here in California, Governor Jerry Brown made history this week by signing into law the Fair Education Act, otherwise known as SB 48. Governor Brown signed landmark legislation on Thursday that mandates the contributions of LGBT people be included in school lesson plans. The Fair, Accurate, Inclusive, and Respectful Education Act was introduced by gay Senator Mark Leno, partly as a way to combat bullying of students who are gay or perceived to be gay. The Fair Act passed by the Senate in April and the Assembly earlier this month. Aside from ensuring that the contributions of gay and gay rights are included in textbooks, the legislation adds sexual orientation to the state's existing anti-discrimination protections that prohibit bias in school activities, instruction, and instructional materials. Equality California Executive Director Roland Palencia said, "Today marks a monumental victory for the LGBT civil rights movement, as the contributions of the diverse LGBT community will no longer be erased from history. Thanks to the Fair Education Act, California students, particularly LGBT youth, will find new hope and inspiration and experience a more welcoming environment that will embrace them." Senator Leno said, "Today we're making history in California by ensuring that our textbooks and instructional materials no longer exclude the contributions of LGBT Americans." Leno added, "Denying LGBT people their rightful place in history gives our young people an inaccurate and incomplete view of the world around them." You can hear more from Senator Leno here on Outbeat Radio when he joins Jeff Basham and I next week on Outbeat Now. And here locally, the Sebastopol Documentary Film Festival starts this coming Friday evening at 7 p.m. with a showing of Out in the Silence. This film captures the remarkable chain of events that unfold when the announcement of filmmaker Joe Wilson's wedding to another man ignites a firestorm of controversy in his small Pennsylvania hometown. Drawn back by a plea for help from the mother of a gay teen being tormented at school, Wilson's journey dramatically illustrates the universal challenges of being an outsider in a conservative environment and the transformation that's possible when those who have long been constrained by a traditional code of silence summon the courage to break it. This award-winning film can be seen this Friday, July 22nd at 7 p.m. at the Sebastopol Center for the Arts, 6780 Depot Street in Sebastopol. And for more information about this film and the film festival, go to www.sebastopolfilmfestival.org. And on Saturday and Sunday, July 23rd and 24th, Out in the Vineyard invites you to join them for Wine Country Weekend for Equality, featuring a concert and VIP reception on Saturday with San Francisco rock duo Mental 99 and a swim party on Sunday at 5 p.m. at the Bardsano in Yountville. Proceeds benefit Equality California. And for more information and tickets, go to the website at www.outinthevineyard.com. If you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, please tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat Radio News. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Outbeat Collage with Gary Carnevale and Michaela Kennan.
The next time you see an old queen running free and flaunting effeminately, all those characteristics like limp wrists and lipstick some brothers would rather not see. Remember the bashings and who took the thrashings for all of us, so I reply. The next time you see an old queen running free, just take off your hat and say hi. Then turn to a friend and justly contend that she's one hell of a guy.
The next time you see an old dyke biking free and flaunting most masculinely, her femme on the rear in her leatherette gear that some sisters would rather not see. Remember the old days when we were the bold gays for all of us, so I reply. The next time you see an old dyke riding free, just blow her a kiss and say hi. Then turn to a friend and justly contend that she's one hell of a guy.
There's far too much hatred without our own bigotry splitting us further apart. Internal respect can help us connect to each homosexual heart. So next time you're seen with a dyke or a queen, remember to hold your head high. No closet can hide who we all are inside. Let your homophobia fly. Now turn to a friend with the strength to defend and say she's one hell of a.
She's one hell of a.
She's one hell of a.
And welcome back to Outbeat Collage. Just this past week, Gary Carnevale sat down with Buzz Benz, director of a local play entitled Avow, playing at the Pegasus Theater in Rio Nido. Let's hear their conversation.
Our first guest, Buzz Benz, is the president of the board of directors of the Pegasus Theater Company, which started in 1998 by a group of experienced theater folk living in the Russian River area. Buzz is currently the director of the company's production of the timely and heralded drama, Avow. The play is about a gay couple's struggle to get married despite their church's reluctance to allow them to do so. Welcome to Outbeat Collage, Buzz.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Tell us a bit about your theatrical background.
Well, I've been working with Pegasus since 2003 when I performed in the wildly popular show Sordid Lives. I've acted in several more shows, directed a few more, and this is my third directorial gig for Pegasus.
Hmm. And what about pre-Pegasus?
Well, I actually worked professionally in theater when I lived in British Columbia as a youth, and when I moved to San Francisco, I was part of the Gay Theater Collective that did a play in 1970 at Fort Mason.
Wow. And what play was that?
Oh, golly. Yeah, I can't remember the name right now.
Understandable. Mm-hmm. And so you've done a lot of theater and stuff?
Contents Under Pressure.
Oh, really?
That was the name of the show, Contents Under Pressure.
An LGBT show?
Yes, it was an LGBT show about gay violence in a gay neighborhood, or
wow.
Anti-gay violence in a gay neighborhood.
1970?
Yes, sir.
Incredible. Well, we'll have to look that up. Do you think there's some archival information about it? I'm sure there is.
Yeah.
Great. So what made you decide to get involved with Pegasus?
I enjoy community theater. I enjoy performing, acting. It's a social world that's really fun. And the company has a great contribution to make to the Russian River area.
Mm-hmm. When you speak about the company, how many core company members are there?
You could say it was a dozen. You could say it was 50. You could say it was 80. And mm-hmm. all of those would be accurate.
Right, right. Because when you see the show, you see often the same actors who obviously live in the area.
Yes.
And are involved in some of the great shows. Talk about some of the great shows that Pegasus has put on that were interest to the LGBT community, including Sordid Lives.
Well, I performed in Bent, the show about Nazi Germany and the incarceration of homosexuals.
Which was one of the best plays, or productions of the play I've ever seen.
It was quite chilling, and I had the challenge of portraying the Nazi officer.
Mm-hmm.
I was also in a show called Swimming in the Shallows, which had a gay character in it. I have been in a couple of little one-acts that have gay themes, and Jeffrey was performed and produced, I think, 4 years ago by the company.
Hmm. I saw that too. I realize it was that long ago, which is another excellent production.
Thank you.
So the company seems to have settled into the Rio Nido Lodge. Tell us about the performance space there.
Well, the Rio Nido Lodge is a historic structure that goes back to the 30s when it was originally functioned as a dance hall and a center for social activity for young people. There were many dance halls up and down the river at that time, and the lodge was one of those places. The big bands would play, the kids would dance, and it was all very wonderful and innocent.
Mm-hmm. Before the gays invaded.
Before, yes.
Or the gays saved the Russian River area. So has there been some renovation there to make it more friendly? Was there always a stage area?
There was a very open space, and we have added risers for seating. We have fixed up a lobby. There's an actor's dressing room. It's very basic, but we can get an audience in and give them a great performance.
Excellent. So how important would you say it is for the LGBT community to support local theater?
I personally think that it's a wonderful opportunity to when we get to sit in the same space with people and experience live actors that are actually portraying something. It's totally different than looking at a movie in our iPhones or online or those sorts of things. Live theater has a magic all its own. This is an all-volunteer company, and the support of the LGBT community is really important to us, which is why we continue this programming.
So how did you and the good people at Pegasus learn about Avow, and what made the board decide that they wanted to stage it?
Well, I have been looking for gay plays for years, and I have a long list of plays. And Avow was one of three plays that I submitted to our artistic director for consideration for this particular season. There are, of course, a number of constraints about is it castable, is it producible, what kind of sets does it need. And this show fits all of those criteria, and it also is very topical.
Were you always interested in directing the show? Did you
Yes.
come in knowing that you would be directing?
And that's how yes, you that was my interest.
To the board. Excellent. So Avow has quite an interesting history. Can you tell us about its creation and where else it's been staged and the response to it?
It was originally premiered in 1996 off-Broadway, and that was a full 8 years before people actually started marrying in the state of Massachusetts. So in many ways, it was ahead of its time. And the play Avow isn't actually about legal marriage or Proposition 8 or all of those issues that we are now wrestling with so much. I mean, state of New York is in the midst, the throes of wrestling mm-hmm. with this issue right now, and the Archbishop of New York is battling it all. So this was before its time, and it was the gay couple in this play is asking for the blessing of the priest. And the characters, Brian and Tom, feel that they are religious and devout, and they want their love to be blessed in the eyes of God.
Roman Catholic?
Yes.
Okay.
Not surprisingly, their favorite parish priest, Father Raymond, denies them that blessing and goes on to say that until they are celibate, they will not be seen by God or by the church, I would have to say, mm-hmm. seen by the church as leading the kind of lives that they should be. One of the partners, Brian, is outraged with this, and the other partner, Tom, starts to deliberate on it and starts to wonder if this is something that they should do and something that they should seriously consider.
So there's soul-searching of the characters, questioning their faith and their place.
And their relationship, their place in their family.
Mm-hmm.
The action of the play gets complicated when Brian's sister, Irene, who is unmarried and pregnant, takes on Father Raymond and tries to persuade him to perform the blessing for her dear gay brother. Interestingly, Irene and Raymond begin to have an attraction to each other, and Raymond starts to doubt his vows and his life and his loneliness. Irene is looking at where she is in terms of her spirituality, her baby, her family life, as well as Rose, who is Irene and Brian's mother. So the entire family is brought into this question of what is right? What do I trust? Do I trust my heart? Do I trust doctrine? How do I make the people who I love the most in my life be recognized in what they want? And there is a lot of soul searching and balancing of these elements in the course of the play that all of these characters have to look at.
So how did you go about casting the play, and what do these particular actors bring to their roles?
Well, we had open casting, but I did some outreach, and I was very fortunate to bring in some actors that haven't been with Pegasus for a number of years. Sharon Hawthorne, Joe Ciccio, and Maria Giordano have not been acted with us, but I have worked with them in the past, and they were gracious enough to audition and then accept roles. Maria does the role of Irene, Sharon does the role of Rose, and Joe does the role of Father Nash, the older priest and confessor to Rose and Father Raymond. The roles of Tom and Brian are done by John Rowan and Diz Scruffles.
So talk about how many people it takes to actually stage a show like A Vow.
Oy, it takes a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, the publicity, concessions, painting, people paying the bills, costumes. There are more people that are working on it offstage that are on stage. And in our case, all of these people do this volunteer and just for their love of theater and wanting to see theater stay in the Russian River community.
And talk a bit about your process as director.
Well, this is a challenging show in that we have two acts, and in each of the acts there are 13 scenes. And they take place in the script, they take place in 8 different locations. Hmm. Now, we have had to whittle that down. Some of the scenes are quite short in the script. Some of the scenes are less than a page. Hmm. So transitions between 13 scenes and setting furniture and moving furniture and checking it and getting in, has to be like clockwork. If we have even a 1 minute gap between these scenes, we have 15 minutes of lost time in the course of the act. So we're not only rehearsing lines and emotion and characterization, we're rehearsing furniture moving.
Sure.
I feel that my job is to, of course, interpret the script, but also to bring out the emotional richness that the actors have to provide. We talk a lot in musical terms. Irene is a concert cellist. She has a career as a cellist, and music is an important part of the show. So we talk about rhythms and pacing in musical terms that helps set the tone of some of the scenes. Some of them are funny. Some of them are very dramatic and conflicting. There's heartbreak. There's elation. As well as confrontation and resolution.
So, talk a bit more about Pegasus. It seems to be thriving. You seem to be doing very well when many other theater companies around the country are closing and having some serious financial problems. What are you doing right?
Well, first of all, I would say that we're getting by. We would love to be thriving, but we are getting by, and we are persevering and keeping our eye on staying open. Some of the things we're doing right is that we have no staff expenses. We have very, very low overhead. Mm. We've had to cut back our production budgets. I mean, in years past, production would be put on for somewhere between $5,000 and $6,000, mm, which is not very much money.
Right.
These days it's $3,000.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So you put on a play like a vow for
$3,000. That includes the marketing, the advertising, the rent, the PG&E,
right,
those elements.
Costumes.
Yep.
Yeah. That's incredible. And you've done how many shows will you do this season?
We are doing 5 regular shows and then a special holiday show.
Right. Any clues about the holiday show?
Not that I know of.
Not that you know of. Yeah. So tell people how they can get tickets for A Vow and or learn more about the Pegasus Theater Company.
For all those of you who are internet inclined, which is very strong in the LGBT community, our website is Pegasus Theater. That's theater with an E-R, pegasustheater.com, and you can see and learn much about us. There's also a page for reservations, and you can make reservations online. You can also call our box office answering machine at area code 707-583-2343 and make reservations. One thing everyone should know is that we have pay what you can nights on Fridays, and they're very, very popular, and it brings people into the theater that otherwise couldn't afford our giant $20 ticket price. Mm-hmm. $15 for seniors.
Right.
So if you would like to see our show and you can't afford the regular ticket price, come on a Friday and $5 will get you in the door.
Excellent. Buzz Benz, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Gary.
Best of luck with the vibe.
Bringing out ladies never is easy. They like to have their own way. They're caught up in labels, those hetero fables. They'll never believe that they're gay. They might like to try it, but they'll never buy it. And buy is the farthest they'll go. They'll never admit it, but you know you hit it the first time they kiss you hello. Bringing out ladies never is easy. They'll never admit what they do. They're not really gay, they're just finding their way. The attraction is only to you. And the older they get, why, the harder it is. They've got their lives in a plan. They'll get their degree, and married they'll be to the world's most appropriate man. Bringing out ladies never is easy. They read every book they can find. Those endless discussions with no repercussions, except to delay what they find. They stall with a
question on past life regression.
Repeating words like Gertrude Stein, Gertrude Stein, Gertrude Stein, Gertrude Stein. But you know they know
when they ask to go dancing sometime.
And welcome back. We just heard a selection entitled Rendezvous, featuring pianist Jim Brickman along with Herb Alpert of Tijuana Brass fame. Incidentally, Herb Alpert wrote that particular piece. Both of those from his album Destiny. Prior to that, we heard two selections, She's One Hell of a Guy and Bringing Out Ladies, both from a musical review entitled Intimate Friends. Let's take a brief break.
You're listening to KRCB-FM Santa Rosa here at Community Powered Radio 91.1 and 90.9 FM, and this is Outbeat Collage. The time is 8:32.
Thanks, Mary. And yes, you are listening to Outbeat Collage Out in the Arts. Michaela Kennan here, your host for the evening. We go back now to Gary Carnevale and his second interview, this time with Jason Perdue of the Sebastopol Documentary Film Festival 2011.
Welcome back to Outbeat Collage Out in the Arts. I'm Gary Carnevale here in the studio with Michaela Kennan and Mary Moore Capagna. Our next guest is the program director of the Sebastopol Documentary Film Festival, which will begin its Best of the Fest series with Out in Silence, Friday, July 22nd. Jason Perdue has been a member of the San Francisco Film Society for 14 years. He grew up here in Guerneville, or here in Sonoma County in Guerneville. He came to the local festival in 2007 and brought with him his true film fan's perspective. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Thank you for having me.
Talk a bit about your background in film, if you have any.
Well, mostly just as you read there, I'm just a huge fan. I love film festivals. I started going to the film festival in San Francisco, going on almost 20 years now, and just immediately fell in love with the whole spectacle of it. The ability to hear and meet filmmakers, to see unique films you're not going to see anywhere else, possibly never even, you know, that 20 years ago, not even getting them on video or DVD. So it was really an adventure for me. And so then I just started at San Francisco. There's a film festival practically every weekend somewhere, so you can always catch unique stuff. And then I started traveling around a little bit. I went to South by Southwest a couple of times, and just really got into the kind of film festival life. And when I moved up here to Sonoma County, a friend of mine had started planning the first Sebastopol Documentary Film Festival. And when I heard that, I was like, oh yeah, I definitely want to get involved. And so it's just been 4 years of really a lot of fun. And I've been the program director now for the last 3 years, and just am learning a ton about this business, about film festivals and programming, and especially about documentary films.
So tell us exactly what a program director does.
Well, I mean, for us, it's really, you could say it's program / festival director, I guess, because pretty much I am in charge of just about every aspect of the film festival. Generally, program director would be you announce the call for entry, you take in as many films as you can, you try to promote that, you cultivate that relationship with organizations and websites and different things where filmmakers are, so that you can really kind of establish your name as a film festival and as a program director. Then you organize a committee that helps you sort through the films and really let the cream rise to the top, and you start to see a program develop, and then you start picking the films and slotting them into time slots. And then even once that's all done, then it's this, you know, this is an enormous event you have to plan. People coming in, filmmakers flying in from around the world, parties, you got to get equipment, you got to find venues. There's, you know, Sebastopol only has one movie theater, so we show movies in a lot of different places around Sebastopol, and that's part of the unique aspect of it, I think.
Offer our audience a brief history of the Sebastopol Documentary Film Festival.
Well, in 2007, it may have even started a little bit before maybe in late 2006, Eliza Hemingway founded the Sebastopol Documentary Film Festival, and she approached the Sebastopol Center for the Arts to partner up with as a kind of infrastructure community backbone to help her produce the event. And there was a group of about 7 or 8 of us that got together. We put out a small call for entry. We got in some films. We invited a few films. We had some special programs, and it was a huge success. The first one was held in November of 2007, and we just were totally shocked by the turnout, by the number of filmmakers that came, and by just how enthused everybody was about it. And we decided to do it again. We waited about 15 months for the second one. We pushed it all the way to March for the second year, so it was actually March of 2009 was the second one. And we just kind of kept expanding, kept pushing out our call for entry to a larger and larger audience. And now in this year's program, we had films from 21 different countries. I mean, it was amazing.
It is amazing. So how many films do you screen before deciding on which ones get into the program?
We, for the last couple of years, we've received somewhere around 300 films submitted, shorts and features. And so we watch them all. I mean, you know, it doesn't mean we get to the end of every single one of them, but in general, we definitely give every film that submits a fair shot to make our program. And we have a spirited discussion about all these films. That's pretty much it.
So talk about that process.
You know, there's about 8 to 10 of us on the selection committee, and the films come in, and I just sort them through into groups, and I hand them out to my committee, and they watch them on their own time. We have an online judging system, so it all populates to a spreadsheet, and we can kind of keep track of what people think of the films that are getting a wide variety of opinions. We will bring to our meetings, and we'll have a discussion about what people like and what people didn't like, and where it's going. And then there's also the aspects that there's some films that we invite to submit. And that's from my outreach. I go to San Francisco International. I go to other film festivals. I'm going to Silver Docks next week. And those types of outreach is where I get to see kind of some of the first run documentary films, meet some of the filmmakers, and really invite them to submit their film. And so those are usually, you know, pretty high level films. Some of them have distributors. And we're really kind of moving into that arena a bit with our film festival. I would say about probably half of our features last year were invited in some fashion or a connection to somebody on the committee.
Right, right. The landscape of documentary films has sort of changed since Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth and Michael Moore's films. Why is it that more and more audiences are drawn to documentaries?
I think that there's a real hunger for reality-based entertainment. I mean, I think that reality television, competition shows, all this stuff is you know, the incredible enthusiasm that people have for professional sports. I mean, all this stuff, there's something about that, even though reality television is scripted in its own way, even the fantasy that it's somewhat based in reality is appealing to people, and I think that there's become this acceptance of that. And then just the incredible quality of productions that are coming out, the number of voices that can be heard because the production costs have dropped so much. And that's the main reason that reality television is so is at least, I don't even know if it's so popular, but it's so prevalent, is because the TV studios already said it doesn't cost anything to produce
right.
them.
Cheap, you know? To make.
Yeah.
They don't have to pay Charlie Sheen. And
right. And writers and everybody else.
Right.
So, that being said, I think the documentary films, obviously a completely different style of entertainment, I think that there's just been an acceptance of that as being equal with another type of film if the subject matter matters to you. And I think that that's what's really interesting, is that not every documentary film is a set of talking heads. Talking about the worst things in the world or how we're going to, you know, that's definitely a specific part of documentary films for sure. But we show a lot of documentary films that are just great character studies, great ideas, films that kind of are combining a lot of fictional and narrative techniques and ideas along with the documentary aspects. Things, you know, where you're sometimes, I think that you can get to a greater truth by using some techniques that would be considered to be not true, i.e. The Daily Show, where they make fun of something, but they actually get to a deeper truth about it than the real news can ever get to, right? So there's aspects of that that's going on in documentary film that I think is very intriguing. Some people might call them hybrid documentaries or experimental documentaries, but in a lot of cases it's becoming the norm. Recreations is almost, nobody even thinks about it anymore, but when Errol Morris did it in The Thin Blue Line, everybody was like, oh my God, I can't believe he's recreating things for a documentary.
Right, you know? Right. Which goes back to Nanook of the North.
Right.
One of the first documentary film festivals.
Right.
Films. And now there's the whole controversy surrounding films like Catfish and Exit Through the Gift Shop.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's I love that debate. I mean, I don't as there's people on my committee for sure that would say that there is a definition of documentary film, but I like to let that definition be a little more fluid and let it evolve with the times and our understanding of how to perceive media and how to perceive all of those things, because I think it's changing a lot. Mm-hmm. I think that the media literacy of the average person is becoming very strong, just based on the amount of stuff you can't open your email without getting three videos and what, turn on your Facebook and somebody's sharing something with you, and all you're overdoing is going, okay, what's going on here? You're constantly critiquing and figuring out exactly what's real and what isn't. You know, you watch something, you think it's great, you send it to 20 friends, you find out later it was a commercial for the little bottle in the corner. You didn't even realize it, you know.
right that you were helping sell a product. Product placement.
Right.
So how important have queer films been to the Sebastopol Fest?
They've been a huge part of our festival every year, and I think that documentaries have a big what am I trying to say? The LGBT community has created lots of documentaries over the years, for sure, about all of the causes and all of the issues that surround that community, and we've always been able to find and show a good number of them over the years. We did a 20, I think it was 20 or 25 year anniversary of Word Is Out 2 years ago, which was great. It was made by a filmmaking collective, and all 7 or 8 filmmakers came, and it was like a huge celebration. And this year with Out in the Silence, the program, we had to turn away. I mean, it was, you know, people were clamoring at the doors to get in. We were just stuffing chairs in, and it was from the reports. I was actually kind of milling around between screenings, kind of moving around, so I didn't see when the film ended. But everybody said that it was the most spontaneous standing ovation that anybody had ever received at the film festival.
Wow.
So I mean, I think it really points to the film, the audience that comes, and to what we're trying to do in Sebastopol.
Talk about Out in Silence, which opens the Best of the Fest series this Friday at the Sebastopol Center for the Arts.
Out in the Silence is a wonderful film made by Dean Hamer and Joe Wilson. They are a couple who live on the East Coast, and Joe is from a small town in Ohio where they went back and were there and really could palpably feel the homophobia that was going on there, and they really wanted to explore that and found some really interesting characters, ultimately finding a young high school boy who they follow for a period of time as he goes through the difficulties of coming out and people knowing and all of the abuse that was, you know, rained down upon him, and really, you know, having a few friends, but basically, at least the way the film makes it seem, is that he was really the only kid that was coming out and saying this, and he juxtaposes that with a lot of very sensitive interviews with people that are on the other side of the fence. You know, it's not a black and white issue. I think the thing that can happen real easily in a documentary film is you can demonize somebody very easily. And I think he does a good job of really showing that these other people have real opinions that matter to some extent, and really trying to educate and evolve everybody all at the same time.
Right. I mean, and the film speaks to the power of documentary film and a talented filmmaker. I mean, as a hometown boy, he sort of has access to people. He's speaking to preachers. He's speaking to members of the school board, and of course, some of them are running from him. But he has access, and he really has put together an incredible film, a powerful film that really has something to say about what it's like to be gay in every town, America. You know, we live sort of in this bubble here in the Bay Area, and we sort of forget that there are people who are fighting for survival, let alone fighting for rights as a community.
Right.
What are the filmmakers up to now?
You know, really, they've been touring this film around the country for well over a year now, and my understanding is that they're trying to kind of do a small town tour of this film around the country and really just get it in front of as many eyeballs as they can, because it's really the kind of film that you walk out of and it really affects you. It really can change your opinion of if you were on the other side of the fence. You can really, I mean, it's a pretty tough issue to change someone's mind completely, but it's a film that really can open the eyes of a small community and really increase tolerance in a lot of ways. And so they've really been doing that. I follow them on Facebook and Twitter, and they're constantly posting about they were in this town, they were in that town, and so it's great. I believe they're working on some other projects, but I'm not absolutely sure exactly what those are.
I'm not quite finished with this film.
Right. I think this film has a lot of legs, and and so they've really had the ability to just keep getting it out there.
Mm-hmm. In fact, it aired last month on KRCB as part of their KRCB TV as part of their Pride Month celebration.
Yeah.
So talk about some of the other films that will be screened as part of the Best of the Fest series.
Let's see. So we're going to run six screenings between July 22nd and October 28th. We're going to do, you know, they're spread anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks apart, somewhere in that range. And let's see. Well, we're going to have on August 26th, we're going to show a great film. It's a short film. It's called The Most Distant Places, and the filmmaker's from Berkeley. And it's about a mobile surgical hospital that a doctor in Ecuador builds because he realizes that the people that live in the mountains and way out in the middle of nowhere, when they actually need surgery, it's literally impossible for them to get surgery. There's no sterile environments. There's no way to transport them to a hospital. So he actually builds a sterile hospital room or operating room in a truck and drives them out there. And it's this amazing story of this man's dedication. And as it turns out, I was talking to a friend of mine who's a doctor in Sebastopol and was telling him the story about this film because I thought he'd be interested. And he said, "Oh, I worked on that truck in Ecuador." So we're hoping that the filmmaker will come, that we can get the doctor there. It's going to be an actual lively discussion about the whole event.
Great.
Yeah. The last two screenings are the two films that won our big awards during this year's festival. On October 7th is Deconstructing Dad, which is a film about the composer Raymond Scott. And it's made by his son. And Raymond Scott would be most known for the composer who wrote all the music for all of the Warner Brothers cartoons when we were kids.
Wow.
And actually wrote the music, and they actually licensed it to put on their cartoons, not the other way around. And so when you hear the music, you recognize it all. But it's a great film about his legacy, the history, but also about what it's like to be the son of a very famous kind of obsessive art artist.
Right, right.
And then the last screening, October 28th, is our jury prize winner, Goodnight Nobody. And it's just this beautiful, almost experimental documentary about insomnia. And she has found four of the most unique characters, and they're all over the world, China, the Ukraine, one's in Arizona, and one is in Africa. And she follows them. And the way the movie is constructed is it's kind of you're following them through one night of sleeplessness, and these are people that throughout the movie you realize they claim to have not slept for years, and they kind of it's kind of a mood film where you kind of get into this, you start to feel what it's like as you go through the 75 minutes of the film. By the end, you have this kind of disorientation and feeling like you've been awake for a long time. It's amazing what she's been able to do with it, and it's just literally one of the most beautiful films we've ever shown.
Wow, yeah. They all sound like great films. How can people find out more about the Sebastopol Doc Fest?
Well, they can definitely come to our website at sebastopolfilmfestival.org, and we're on Facebook and Twitter and everything else, so they can definitely find us around there. And our schedule's up right on the homepage, and you can buy tickets at the Sebastopol Center for the Arts. $10 for each show, or we're going to sell a kind of pass for all the films for $50. So if you wanted to try and make them all, then you could get a small discount there.
Excellent, excellent. Jason, it's been a pleasure meeting you, and thank you for joining us tonight on Outbeat Collage.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thanks so much, Gary. And do check out the Sebastopol Documentary Film Festival website for the full schedule of Friday showings, now through October 28th. Here's a couple of other dates to note. August 6th and 7th, SOFA, the South A Street Arts District in Santa Rosa, will be sponsoring an art walk featuring the works of 28 local artists, all exhibiting within the one-block neighborhood just adjacent to that beautiful Juilliard Park area. Hours are 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Artwork will be for sale. Actually, it's a great opportunity to not only support local arts in our community, but meet the artists as well. So do check those people out. Next month on Outbeat Collage, our August 21st show will feature an interview with Denny Heyman, veterinarian, playwright, composer, and author of a wonderful little book entitled Purple Grass. We'll also talk about the upcoming Art for Life event, sponsored by Face to Face, and chat with a few of the artists that will be exhibiting at that event happening in September. Once again, our thanks to Buzz Spence and Jason Perdue. Also to Mary Moore Campagna for engineering this evening, to KRCB Community Radio, of course you, our listening audience. Two musical pieces to take us out right now. Lucinda Williams is featured with a vocal piece entitled Like a Rose, this from the soundtrack Transamerica, and Barbara Higbee finishes with an instrumental selection from her Best Of album entitled To Be. I'm Michaela Cannon. On behalf of Gary Carnevale and myself, catch us next month on Outbeat Collage, and thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye.
It's okay, you don't have to be afraid. There's nothing to worry about, 'cause we got it made. It's just a simple matter of letting me into your love. If you let that feeling come over you, then there's nothing more that you can do. Just let it go, let it go. If it's love you want, hold out your arms. It's all right here, it's safe and warm. It's okay to feel good, that's the way it should be. Everything we have is fresh and new. I will open myself up to you like a rose, like a rose. It's fresh and new. I will open myself up to you like a rose, like a rose.